late. We are going
live with Jeanette Wade. Joe's asking a whole bunch of questions offline as I hit the record button. Welcome to Out From The Cube. Appreciate everybody listening to this. We've got another great guest that Joe has lined up for us today, Jeanette Wade, who is local. We're all here in the St. Louis area. Jeanette, you are here, right? You're local here in the St. Louis area?
Sure am.
Perfect. So let's start with the typical question that St. Louisans get. Where'd you go to high school?
I actually grew up in Washington, Missouri, just outside of St. Louis. So I went to Washington High School.
Yeah, Washington. The mascot for Washington is
Blue Jays.
Is it? Oh,
yeah, I hit the buzzer first. I got that first. Awesome. So are you born and raised then in the Missouri area, in the Washington area?
Yeah, I grew up in Washington, but I've lived out here in West County in Baldwin for 26 years.
26 years. Okay, so I know that is the question for those that are listening on why we would jump to that. That is, I've lived in maybe 8 states, and there is that question of where you went to high school and all that sort of stuff. It is definitely, that drum beats loud and frequently here in St. Louis. So that is the introduction question of where did you go to high school? So that's why I think I knew you were from this area and thought that would be a good question to start with. So we have with us Jeanette Wade, and I'm super interested. You met Joe a few weeks ago. This is one thing I really love about our podcast is Jeanette and I met 5 minutes ago, and Joe, you all met 1 week ago and have only had one conversation. So absolutely love kind of that setup to our podcast is that we don't know. I did some research on you and I'm super excited about having these conversations with you. But why don't you let everybody know who you are and what you do?
Yeah, you know, it is interesting that high school question and the connections we all have. We're all networked somehow. So yeah, we stumbled upon each other. And my background and what I do. So for 26 years in business management, business operations, marketing, and the last almost 9 years now, I've been an EOS implementer, which is the Entrepreneurial Operating System, helping privately held businesses get traction on their vision with really strong, healthy teams. And then this past year, actually just a couple months ago, I launched my book, The Human Team, which is so you created a team, but people showed up. So talking about what needs are in the workplace around people, individuals, and teams so that we can get the most out of them.
That's awesome. Love it. Yeah. And one thing that you, and I, this was kind of the question I wanted to start with. And I really like that. You know, the first thing when I read that title of your book, that people showed up and you're building these teams, man, that actually, it made me laugh and chuckle a little bit. I work with teams for a living, as does Joe. And so, we have these great intentions and these great directions and these great, you know, missions and milestones and everything that we'd like to accomplish. And then people get in the way, right? And we're like, man, we've got to deal with all these people. One thing that really attracted me to your profile and on LinkedIn and the message, I guess, on your, I don't even know what it's called, on your kind of your outlook or what, let me look here real quick, on your about section. And I really like this because I was listening to a podcast this morning on my run and this gentleman just kept talking about energy. And he kept talking about the energy and all this. And I really buy into this stuff, but you talk a lot, you had some bullet points in your about section on LinkedIn where you were talking about the energy, you know, of teams or of people, of organizations. And that was like the first thing that caught my mind is because I mentioned this the other day was about just, you know, there's energy givers and energy takers, and there's people in rooms that just suck the energy out. And then there's people that walk through those doors and everything just gets going, right? The whole energy gets, taken to another level. Talk about why that's important to you or why you felt to include that on your LinkedIn profile.
Well, teams and businesses and organizations only succeed or fail to the extent that they harness human energy or the people potential that they have. And what ends up happening, you're right, you get the draining of energy from the nature or the people that show up, right? So the complaining or the reactions or the instincts or the things that are happening autopilot within the human animal, and we get frustrated by it. Or we're trying to fill the tank on energy by nurturing outcomes and you know, motivating and coaching and engaging and training, and we're trying to fill the tank on that human energy only to find out that the tank isn't there to fill. And so trying to figure out how do we harness human energy, what I discovered was there was a gap between nature, the people that showed up, and the nurturing we keep doing and spending money on and exhausting ourselves around, that if we can get six facets of human needs met, that they end up harnessing that human energy more effectively, and we can truly nurture to stronger outcomes and really kind of catapult that effort with energy.
How difficult is that? Go ahead, Joe.
You mentioned the six facets of human need. What are those six?
The six are to have every human being on your team has a need for clarity, a need to be connected or connection, a need to contribute, to challenge, to be challenged, to be considered, and to have confidence.
Love it. Love it. Great question, Joe. I'm glad you interrupted me. I love that.
That is
right. I mean, I absolutely love this list. Clarity, connected, challenged, considered, and confidence. And I'm missing one. Contributing.
Contribute.
I'm stealing it. I'm stealing the C's. I'm stealing all of these. How hard is it in these human needs? But to circle back to the energy. How hard is it in a professional world where you're dealing with adults that range, you know, from like, let's say from 25 to 65, right? We're dealing with these professionals in there. How hard is it to coach and lead and change the people that are energy drainers and the people that don't bring that energy or the people that bring teams down? How hard is it to coach them up and change that, you know, that the language, the body language, the way they communicate, the way they problem solve? How difficult is that to change people around in that energy bucket?
So it's kind of a two-part answer. You know, human beings are kind of in a bell curve, and the ones who are on a certain side of the bell curve that are not fixable, psychological issues, mental challenges, anything that's just naturally them that you cannot change, you can exhaust yourself fixing it and you can't. So don't even try. But there's a huge percentage of people on your team that I think it's simple, but not easy, right? And we have all the excuses in the world not to do it. But I would say the key ingredient to harnessing that human energy is it just takes some time and attention, the appropriate amount of time and attention per person or per team. And a lot of leaders and managers always have the excuse of, I'm too busy to give the time. I don't know how to give the attention. So time and attention is the key to unlocking that, and focusing your time and attention in those six C areas. Actually, it's simple, but not easy, right? So if you can focus in there and just assess where they stand and where their gaps are in those six areas, whether it's a team, individual, or the entire organization, you then have a roadmap to harness that human energy.
So this is what your book is about, right? The human team. You definitely spend a lot of time on these six C's, correct?
Yes.
And so are you finding out in your research, I mean, who has the onus here? Is it the manager or is it the employee, you know, being clear and concise and being out front? Like, so if the manager is not, you know, I guess, comfortable in this space, then does the onus fall on the employee to say, all right, like, let's talk about me or my needs and, you know, talk about some of these six C's?
Yeah, I would say the primary onus is on leader and manager, as go they, you know, so goes the rest of the organization. There are some people who are instinctually or naturally proactive about getting their needs met. Those are on the bell curve, the demanders, right? I demand to be heard and seen and belong here and contribute and do all those things. That type of courage from an employee level to kind of demand your needs get met so that you can actually perform well is pretty rare. I would say it starts with the leader and manager primarily.
A demander. I have to ask this, and this may not be a fair question, but you say demanders, like that's a trait, like a personality trait or a team trait, whatever that might, whatever phrase fits there. What are the, I feel like there's more than just demanders. There's other traits in there that could be good bullets for us. Are there other ones other than that, that you know?
Yeah. Offhand? I mean, that was probably a high level thing off the cuff that I said, but so there are a percentage of employees who are naturally growth mindset, could be another look at that, or who are naturally what Brené Brown, you know, would say is the brave and courage side. They want to step in and be part of, so they get brave around it. So there's a percentage of employees that, you know, read those books, are growth oriented, you know, challenge themselves naturally to be better. And when I say they're demanders, a lot of times they demand that of themselves and of others around them. They tend to be the shining star employees. They tend to be the high achievers. They tend to be the ones next in line for leadership. So and demanding is not a bad thing. It's just that, you know, I really want this for myself and for others and for the organization.
When you, is your book, I haven't looked at your book, just being honest with you, and we just met earlier today. So the human need, these six C's that you roll through, is that kind of the core and crux of the book? Is that where these come from, or where you kind of worked on these?
Absolutely. Yeah, because what ended up happening was I coach, I facilitate teaching coach leadership teams as my core business as an EOS implementer. We talk about vision, traction, and healthy as being key to running a great business. And healthy teams is the crux of my book. And what I was finding was that I was getting a lot of leaders and managers that were frustrated by ineffective people or coaching or engaging people and not getting the results still. So they kept doing things to people and hoping that they would get to the outcomes they wanted to get. And they would get short-lived, sporadic outcomes, and then get frustrated that they'd have to reinvest again. And what I was finding was there were some common things that were bridging the gap on them to be more effective as a leader and manager, but also to get the most out of those people in those teams. And that's where the book came from, was really, how do we really embrace humanity, embrace people, because humans gonna happen and we're all gonna have human moments at work. How do we embrace that as a truth? And then how do we really get the most out of them by getting needs met? And when we get the needs met, humanity is unlocked, or that human energy is unlocked.
I love it. I apologize for some silence, but I am taking some notes here because I think this is absolutely great. Because listen, I'm really bent on this for the past while. I work and with Joe. To a certain extent with young athletes as well. Like we're talking like 10-year-old Joe has four children. I have three children. So we have these young children that we're trying to build up and mentor, and we and lead. And we do a fair amount of that through athletics, like most probably parents do, or they find sports that their children enjoy, have fun with and excel in, hopefully. And as I look at this list, and I spend a fair amount of time, like, you know, throughout the week working with youth, but I am also working with 65-year-old professionals, and I'm looking at this list of, you know, clarity and connected and contribute and challenged and it's considered, right? Is that right?
Consideration.
Yeah. Okay. And confidence. And I'm really fascinated by this list because we all, like, that's why it's called the human need. Like my 10-year-old needs all this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. My 10-year-old absolutely needs this. He needs to feel like he's contributing to a group. And here's the example. I'm not hijacking your experiences in the conversation, but my son just played for a brand new basketball team this past weekend. And it's a really good ball team here in St. Louis. And really all I felt that he wanted when we were talking on the way to these games this weekend, and it's a 12-year-old kid, doesn't know any of these kids, first time playing, he's nervous. And he, you know, I think he's a decent player and he wants to, but he wanted to have fun. He wanted to contribute and he wanted to feel valued, right? He wanted to fit in, right? He wanted to fit in with these kids. And he was, you know, that time between games. And then he wanted to contribute. He wanted to get out there and do something that led the team to success, so he would have some confidence. So he'd feel good about what he's doing and the group would maybe accept him a little bit more. And, you know, he did. He wanted clarity on what he was, what the coach wanted him to do and what he needed. And I'm sitting there thinking about your list. I'm thinking about my 12-year-old. I'm thinking about this past weekend. But I'm also thinking about this new hire that we just got in one of our departments at this software company I work for, where I'm sitting around going, hey, as a group, there's, you know, 12 or 15 of us. And I'm like, hey, this new lady that we just hired, we need to make her feel valued and important. We need to make sure that she can contribute as soon as possible. Like, let's give her something so she feels like she's providing value to us and to our mission and what we're trying to do. And so I'm sitting and she wants clarity, and let's give her clarity on what she can do. but it's the same stuff, right? And I'm just really bent on that. I'm guessing I'd really love your book, right? But can you speak to that range of how it's just human nature for all of this, but from the 10-year-old all the way up to the, and I know I may have asked the same question just a different way, but I'm really fascinated by these six C's and how they drive human performance and really human performance and us enjoying our best lives professionally and with one another.
You probably summarized everything better than I ever could. In fact, I do want the recording of this so I can repeat that in my next interview. But I could have written the book. This could be a series, you know, the human team at work, the human team in relationships, yeah, the human team in community, the human team in adolescence, I mean, in sports, you name it. And so, absolutely. So if you think of, if you're familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs,
sure,
right,
kind of fundamental individual needs, this is the basically the needs for individuals, teams, and organizations to perform, whatever that means, workplace, relationship, community, sports. Right. And so we all have needs to be, you know, that have clarity of what the goal, my role. We need to feel connected, that we belong. It's a really, we always want to know, do I belong here, right? Am I part of, can I contribute effectively? Because I don't know anybody who's part of something unless they're, like I said, bell curve, there's always going to be someone, but the vast majority of people want to contribute in some way. They want to be contributors. Challenge is the one I get a challenge on the most, because people say, I don't think they want to be challenged. I said, they may not want it, but they need it. It's a human need. Mm-hmm. To be growing and changing and be pushed. And so you think in sports or business, we're coaching people and challenging them to level up, right? We all want to be considered and regarded. It's a need. If I'm not considered, it's harder to retain me on a business team, right? I will go somewhere where the grass is greener, where I think I'll get the consideration and regard I deserve. And we all want to be confident in what we do. We want to be able to step in every day and produce the best possible result and get to a new level of capability. So whether you're an adolescent, you're in business, or you're part of a, you know, community organization, what we find is that all of us end up needing this, and the team needs to do this in unity as well.
Mm. So Jeanette, actually something I'm would be interested in hearing, obviously you have a big passion for people development. That's obviously very clear. How do you feel a manager or an owner of a small company or manager of a team, how much time do they need to devote to the actual people, the human aspect of their job? So if they're working a 40-hour week or 50-hour week, whatever that is, I mean, what percent of their time do you really feel needs to be focused on, you know, really kind of, I guess, the people aspect of the business as opposed to just strictly, you know, the results aspects?
If the common denominator of success and failure mm-hmm. on teams or businesses is people, you need to invest on return on individual and return on team.
Yeah.
And so that amount of investment is, you know, you're going to get a lot out of it. So I'd say as much as you possibly can tolerate, and then do 25% more than you feel comfortable with. Yeah. I feel like we don't give enough time and attention. All the surveys that come back in employee engagement, mm-hmm. more times than not, it's about their boss or their manager not right. being clear, not giving time and attention, you know. And so a lot of these issues get resolved if they can get these six needs met, and they actually get the discipline and consistency around time and attention. But of course, don't become a leader or manager if you don't genuinely care about people.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've all had leaders and managers. You can tell they don't care about you. They're just there because they wanted the promotion, and they don't harness that energy of the people on the team. And we start to feel disregarded by them. We start to disconnect. Mm-hmm. We start to get confused in our role and all the opposites of what these six C's could be. And it's because they don't genuinely care about us.
Right. Now we talk about that often. Unfortunately, you know, the best salesman or saleswoman gets promoted to a manager, but they have no idea how to manage people or care about people. It usually doesn't end up well. You could say that about every function, right? So definitely understand what you're saying there.
If we, and I don't know if we're able to go through, if this is okay with you, I would love to go through these six things. And if you have like strategies, tactics, ideas, thoughts, how we could be better at each of these six, I mean, I think that would be really valuable. So now I'm being selfish with my teams, right? No, because I mean, no, Ed Mylett is the guy like I'm bent on right now. I listen to Ed Mylett's podcast every day. not all day, but every day. And he had a gentleman on a few weeks ago, and he was just very upfront about it. He was like, let's just be very honest about this. People leave jobs because they don't like their boss, right? People leave jobs because of their boss. That, and it's not always true. But I'm looking at this list of clarity, connected, contribute, challenged, consideration, and confidence. And if I led my teams in such a way that people were A pluses on all of that individually, people would stay. Like, and it's not that it's not authentic. Like, if I really led with their well, you know, their well-being and their happiness and their job in making sure that they enjoy it as best they can, which would ultimately provide great performance, my hope would be, right? Mm-hmm. That they would never leave. They would never leave. And it would just be because I tried to lead that way as opposed to, you know, C minuses in all these categories, right? But if we were to start with like clarity,
okay,
what is something me being selfish, or our audience could do in terms of giving clarity to our teams that would be like a habit, a strategy, a tactic that we could implement that would make us better in that department?
Yeah, because without clarity, we get confusion and people make assumptions and they move in all different directions. Right. So perfect. To mitigate that, you want to get to agreement on expectations. I think too often we set expectations and that's dictation versus agreements. So setting expectations is a conversation of agreement, not dictation. So I think that's a fundamental belief thing. But one tool I could give you, I call it the clarity tool. Context, content, conclude is the framework for it. And so for every conversation, email, you know, anything where you're going to involve people and you want them to get clarity, you must set context for what you're going to share. So let's just use email as an example. How often do you get an email with a huge amount of content in it and you're not even sure what they really want it or what you're supposed to do with it? Or was this an FYI? Am I even supposed to read it? And you start to get confused, or you make assumptions, and you make an assumption that you shouldn't reply because it wasn't to you. You were only CC'd, all this kind of stuff, right? So setting context in the email or any conversation with why we're having this conversation and what I'm about to tell you. Mm. And then, of course, and these are common sense things, but we don't do them very often.
I think you're absolutely
share
right.
The content directly, clearly, simply. Don't try to make it overly smart, make it common, dumb it down, whatever you need to do. But share that content in a very simple, direct format that, you know, removes any ambiguity. If you need someone to kind of review a bigger communication, please have them do so, because a lot of times we assume, because we know what we're saying, that they'll know it too, and we've missed out key points. So share the content with clarity and directness, and then conclude it for them. Too often we don't conclude it. We just regurgitate information out. We don't set the context for why and what we're about to tell them, and we don't conclude it. The conclude side of this is that what I just told you, why it's important, and what I expect you to do, kind of the next step summary and who's going to do what with absolute clarity. So balls don't get dropped. I really expect, you know, Joe, you're going to take it here, and then George, you'll do this. And by this date, correct? Yes. Okay. Let's move forward. Let's go team, right? It's kind of the huddle up at the end of that conversation. But too often we don't use that framework, context, content, conclude. We just share content, and it's basically just a regurgitation. So that'd be my first tool, just to keep that three-piece framework in mind anytime you're talking to someone.
Yeah, so think how many times you get an email from somebody higher up, and unfortunately, it feels like in today's day and age, we want to be the first to tell, and we just click send, and we get it out there as quickly as we can instead of actually truly thinking through, like, oh, wait, this could impact a lot of people, a lot of different functions, but I definitely like what you're saying. Totally agree. I mean, crafting an email is an art, right? And providing that clear direction is important.
Well, and honestly, just even having a simple conversation with someone, too often we just discuss and don't really take it in. So we don't set up what we're about to say, we don't share it, and then we don't really say what you can do with it. Because the cost of conversation failures, there was a research study, and I don't have the source in front of me, but they said every conversation failure cost an organization on average $5,700 in 7 lost days. So by not being clear on goals and roles and content and direction and plans and every, you know, be sharing openly with clarity and directness, everything, you get these conversation fails, and it actually costs you real money and real time.
Man,
is that why a lot of high level CEOs don't send out very many emails? because I have worked for organizations where some you'll get quite a few, and then others like zero. You'll get a zero. I mean, it has to be extremely, extremely important for the CEO to send out a message.
And some of that is they don't know what to share and how deep to share it. So they hold information back. I think there's a lack of transparency sometimes. Mm-hmm. And if you're transparent, you're clear. I feel like clarity tied with transparency is key. People need to know where we're going in order to buy into the vision. And if you stop sharing it, they stop buying in.
Love it. Yeah, context, content, and conclude in a conclusion. Absolutely love it. All right. So what about being connected? What would be the next C? Yeah. Give us some strategies there.
If I'm not connected, I don't belong on the team. I don't feel I belong. I get disconnected and I can become dysfunctional because human beings are, you know, community, tribal, you know, we're as an animal, we work well together. And when we're not part of the team, we become othered. If you've ever heard that term in psychology, the team kind of kicks you out or you feel like you're not part of and you become less productive. And so what we want to do within connection is to make sure that everyone truly feels they belong. There's a lot of ways to belong, getting to know each other better. Because if you think about when you know and like someone, you trust them and you tend to belong together. Sharing common core values is a common way of belonging. But something we tend to miss is that community aspect around place. So you mentioned St. Louis and the high school thing. That's a common connection to place that we share. Right. And that it connects us in a way. You're like, oh, yeah, I went to the high school. Or I know people from that high school. Suddenly we feel a level of connection. Or I know the mascot at Washington High. We feel connected, right? So that sense of place is a connection thing. So just think about when you think about archaeology, anthropology, you think about any time you look at, you know, the history of a community or a tribe or an organization, they're always talking about where they're from, a geographic landmark. In St. Louis, we have the Arch, right? So there's things that we anchor to as humans around place. And so giving them a common sense of place. I see this in virtual a lot. So I get this question a lot recently because of all the Zoom calls and virtual work that we're feeling a lack of connection. And I said, well, we could do all these other connection things, trust builders and conversations and happy hours, and we can do all that. That's all great connection work. But one thing you might be missing is that our backgrounds are all different. All three of us are not in the same place right now. But if I give us all a common background, even if it's just our backdrop for our logo or a common workspace feel, we'll suddenly feel connected. And we've been testing this out on teams, and the ones who share, they go in into their office and they take pictures of the office and they give it to everybody to put in their backgrounds. They're like, oh, we're all at work together. It's just a subconscious thing around place where we feel connected.
Oh, that's great.
The one thing, again, I keep dropping Ed Milet. You know, he needs to be a sponsor and start dropping us some money, but as much as I reference him. But he had a podcast with a gentleman named Aubrey Marcus that I was listening to today. And I don't know if this is – I took this for truth, right? You take it for what it is. But the number one killer right now, and I don't know how they measure this, right now with all this COVID stuff going on the past year, and I understand the point. So it's not in the numbers necessarily, but it's the point of it, is not, you know, cancer, and it's not, you know, heart disease and all this other stuff, but he was talking about it's loneliness.
Yeah.
It's what the loneliness of being isolated in your home for 12, 14 months and not being out there. And he was like, there's just this need that we all have to be out and to be connected with people. And it's so important. And I keep thinking about, I just keep thinking about like my nephew who's out away at college, but all his classes are virtual, but he's still at college. And, you know, it's just like, you know, making sure he's okay. Right. That he's, you know, I understand that you're, doing virtual classes and you're in a dorm room for, you know, 8 hours a day. Right. And you're not allowed to go out. And so there's all that of just being connected. So I really appreciate that. And getting people connected, like in this, you know, we had the conversation. It's so hard. Like, we've got this new team at our work that we're trying to get connected with, right? We're trying hard to get all these people from Florida and Finland and Sunnyvale, California, and here in St. Louis and all these different places. And it's a new team, right? And I had a conversation with the gentleman that I report to. And I was like, man, it's so much easier when we're in the office. We can say, hey, let's go grab a drink. Right. And we could actually just go sit at like Bar Louie down the street and just sit there and have a drink and really get to know one another. So it's easy for us to solve problems, right? If you're really connected and then problems arise, it's so much easier knowing where somebody's coming from and what to expect from them and what their perspective might be, that it's just hard to get right now. It's really hard to get.
The level of trust goes up the more you're connected, and the more you trust each other, the more you achieve together, right? And the more you retain people. So this loneliness, lack of connection, burnout, things that happen when we're just when we're disconnected from the team, there's a lot of studies that say, you know, people would have been retained, and retention's a key thing. Finding people and great talent's really hard. And if we don't keep them connected, you can lose up to 77% of them because they don't feel connected.
So you think connection is a major reason for turnover?
It is a huge reason. Right. I don't belong here. And so why would I stay? I have no loyalty, no reason to stay. So if I belong and I'm connected, my retention and loyalty is higher. Because you'd hate to leave a place of work with people you love. Man, I love working with you. Why would I leave? Right.
Right.
I'm going to go to this place where I don't know anybody. It's safer to be here with you because I know you and I trust you and I like you and we perform so well together. It's more important to me than salary to, if I'm with you 8, 9, 10, 12 hours a day, to be around people I love.
Yeah, that's important. And I appreciate the fact that you use the word love, actually. That's been a thing of mine, right? I don't go around. And that's such an uncomfortable thing in the professional world. But, you know, I always use the word appreciate you. Like when I end meetings and it's a really good meeting and I do feel connected, I feel like we're getting more clarity on certain things. And I'm just like, man, I really appreciate you. Thank you so much for this call, right? That sort of thing. Because it would feel a little awkward, right? To have somebody, right? But that's how I feel. Like, man, I just love working with Joe, man. And we just had this great conversation, man. Right. And it's like, man, I just really appreciate you. Now the one I really like is I love all of these and however I can steal them is would be appreciated. Cause I just really buy into all of these. Like I'm super passionate about it. But the contribute one is really, it seems to be really important to me as I watch these teams unfold and how we can get people connected quicker. That's the contribute. What strategies might you have there under getting people to contribute and feel valued there?
Yeah, because if they're not contributing, they're distracted or they're detracting from the team, right? If I'm not contributing in a good way, I'm going to detract you to help you chase shiny objects, right? Or I'm going to be distracted because I don't know what to do. So we really need to give them the ability to work together and to find their unique ability, or that which was what Dan Sullivan would call it in Strategic Coach, or what you might say is your natural ability or skill, allowing everyone to utilize it. People get hired for their, you know, their skill and their ability, their knowledge set and who they are. And sometimes we don't allow them to use it because we're scared of letting go of doing it ourselves. I can't tell you how many leaders and managers bring someone on and then never let go fully to let them do the job.
Mm.
They're like, I don't know. I do it so well now. I know I brought you on. And they kind of slow roll on allowing them to do the job effectively when it's in their natural ability. And sometimes we don't allow people to do things that they are really great at because we need them somewhere else and we drain their energy. So I was on a few teams myself where they're like, you know, I know you're good at this, but we need right now to fill a gap out of someone who left or a position or a project. And I got pulled in 1,000 different directions and I wasn't able to fully contribute where my natural skill set is. So think about where you naturally are great. What do you do when you're naturally great at something? You show up every day with energy to do it. Mm-hmm. You do it to your fullest potential. You get joy from it. People get passionate around it. But if I'm putting you on projects that you're not necessarily that great at, but you're just good at filling the gap, you tend to procrastinate them and not contribute fully. It's not as much passion around it. You're like, I'll do it for the job, for the boss, for the team, but I might not do it as well, and I might not do it timely. And so, I think the other thing on contribution sometimes we miss, because there's a lot of things around contribution we can get into. So I'm going to kind of take the more unusual ones. That as leaders, managers, we need to be cognizant that sometimes we don't allow people to contribute because we trigger them. So we ask abrupt questions, and it's almost like that. If you think about getting the concept of getting called to the principal's office, can you come to my office? I need to talk to you. You have just amygdala hijacked, is what they would call it, that employee. And anytime someone's amygdala, which is my fight, flight, fear mechanism in my chemical brain, right? It fires off the chemicals. Literally in psychology, they've discovered that you're about 15 to 25% dumber in that moment because you're running on instinct and adrenaline. So I've just dumbed you down. You can't contribute. Then I bring you into my office and I ask you questions, hoping you can contribute and help solve issues or do performance correction or do any of that. And I don't answer anything appropriately. I can't tell you how many employees leave those engagements where they've been amygdala hijacked by their manager. Just abrupt questions, interrogations, performance reviews, just whatever it is, an email that was unexpected. And the employee almost always says, oh, I wish I'd said, or I didn't realize what they were wanting and I was shocked by the moment. So we amygdala hijacked our people and they can't contribute in that moment. We do it in meetings. We'll surprise someone with a question they're not prepared to answer. And then we're kind of the deer in the headlights feeling on something critical for the team and they're not prepared and we've just amygdala hijacked them. So you got to be aware that you're dealing with a human animal and you can't, as a leader manager, amygdala hijack people. You need to be cognizant of giving people the feedback in the way they need and want to receive it, the way they like to receive it, or frame up, again, context, content, conclude, right? I need to give you context for what, hey, we're running into this issue in X. I would like to ask some questions about it. Joe, can I ask you this question? He's not going to be amygdala hijack where if I go, hey, Joe, we're off quota, he's going to suddenly freeze, fight, or flight, right? So you got to be cognizant of the way you frame up your conversation so that people can fully contribute in the moment at meetings. If you call them, if you send an email, if you call them into the office, so to speak, I think sometimes we forget how much we trigger people as leaders and managers.
Man, I love it.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
And the next one is that I really like is, and I absolutely agree with this. There's a Kobe Bryant phrase that I saw in the past month or so. I believe it was from him. The leader's primary purpose or job, I forget exactly how they phrased it, is to elevate the team. And that stuck with me. Like, we've got to elevate our team. So how do you elevate your team? So I spent a lot of time thinking about this, which seems strange, but I was thinking about it. How can we elevate our teams? Well, you challenge them. You have them feel like they are capable of more, right? Like, hey, this is cool. This is our baseline. We're really good here. But man, I bet you we're good here. I know we can do X, right? Which means we got to stretch ourselves. David Goggins talks about being comfortable, being uncomfortable. Like, we've got to be comfortable, being uncomfortable. And that comes from being challenged, right? So how can we challenge and motivate and inspire our teams to do more? Because we know they're capable of more.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because without challenge, we get complacency. They don't continue to grow. They don't continue to contribute or any of those things. So the first thing on challenge is kind of a bridge between contribute and challenge is that the size of your team matters. So size matters in this context. And really healthy, challenging teams that can contribute fully together. Ideal size is 3 to 7. The tipping point, according to the research, is 15. That's when empathy begins to break down on a team and they start creating factions and fractions where they can't challenge each other anymore. They don't openly share. They don't openly contribute. And so we want to make sure team size for challenge is appropriate so the team can challenge each other. And if you think about any large room of people, there's a lot of people who don't contribute or challenge each other when the room size gets too big. It's just, it gets uncomfortable. So we need to make sure empathy's high when we're challenging. But I think challenge needs to come from a coaching mindset. Too often we think we'll just challenge you with new goals. And that's where leaders and managers take the approach of, we're just going to up your quota. We're just going to change your goal. We're just going to push harder. Right. And that's not the kind of challenge we're talking about. We're talking about challenge that gets someone to continuously improve, to get to a new level of capability, to get the right kinds of training and within your attention. So that's really a coaching mindset. And I think the sports analogies around that are true, right? So if your coach genuinely cares about you and they push you to do things stronger and better than you have before, you start performing better as an individual contributor and as a team. And so the challenge, you know, can be tough love and or it can be gentle. It can be anything, but the challenge gets more embraced when it comes from a coaching mindset. So having good mentorship programs, having good sponsorship programs. I almost prefer the term sponsorship. I'm going to sponsor you, and meaning I'm going to I want to help promote you within the organization and challenge you to get stronger and better at what you do. And so I think it's just, you have to put a coaching mindset on, because I get some people who are scared to challenge their people. I don't want to push them any harder. I'll hear that. And I'm like, I'm not talking about pushing them. I'm talking about coaching them. I see you shifting left because you shift right. I think you'd be better if you did. And that'll stave off the burnout, right? Versus pushing them. I they need to achieve their goals, so I'm going to make the goals this. And I was like, yes, they need to have clarity of their goals. I go, but how are you challenging and coaching them to achieve the goal? Wow. Right? Wow. And that's a different mindset. Challenges aren't just the goal. It's about how do I help you achieve it better?
Mm. Yeah, I love it. I don't think I've had, I don't know if I've had any impact at where I'm working now. I've been there for about 14 or 15 months. I'd like to think that I'm providing some sort of value. The only thing that I know for sure is everybody's using the word coaching now. I use the word coaching all the time in every meeting with everything. Like, we got to coach them up. We can coach this better. I can coach this better. Like, we've got to coach our people, right? I keep using that word. Now, all of a sudden, I'm seeing all these emails of people using the word coach. And But I think that's right on. I think that there's this coaching that goes on with our teams, that in my mind is very, definitely sports-centered. But like, how can we level people up? To your point, my team right now that I'm working with is doing a great job. They are a phenomenal team. I really, really appreciate the phrase that you used, and I'm going to steal it, is that when these teams get really large, we lose empathy. Like, I absolutely love that because I feel it. We've got a small team doing a lot of work, but we have all these other teams, and I'm really trying hard to get us to think about not departments, not QA, not development, not regulatory, like not all these departments, but one team with a bunch of different groups, offense, defense, special teams, all the same goal, same mission. But because we have all these groups, we have a lot of people, yeah. Right? And you're exactly right. That group is big, and I'm trying to really coach everybody up and coach all these groups up. But there's some of them, I'm not them, but there is a feeling because it's so big that we're losing the empathy of it all. And I absolutely love that.
And you can only give time and attention. So remember, we talked time and attention there for a while, to about 3 to 7 people at any one time. So if you are a leader and manager and you have more than 3 to 7 people, you aren't able to give time and attention. Yeah. And then your teams break down at 15. And that's just in almost every research study I've seen, it seems to be a common number. It's like a magic number. 15 mm-hmm. is the breaking point on empathy. It's where factions and fractions and cliques and all that stuff starts to form.
Yep.
But it's all based on, there was a research study done, I think it was in the 60s, and a gentleman named Ringelman. It's called the Ringelman effect. So if you think about a rope pull, what he did was he put one person on each side of the rope, measured how they, the level of pulling that they did. Each person gave 100% of effort because there's only one person. Every time you add one more person to a side of the rope, the percentage of pulling goes down per person. Mm-hmm. And when you get to around 15, mm-hmm. there are some people not pulling at all. They're just pretending to be part of the team.
Oh,
they're just right. Their lack of empathy around I'm contributing and participating with the team goes down. They're like, I'm just going to pretend to pull. I'm going to let the person in front of me do most of it. And so you start to get lack of contributing, but they don't challenge each other as much because you can't tell who's not pulling. When you only have 3 people pulling, you can feel who's not. And I can challenge, hey, Joe, you're not pulling it today. George and I are pulling all the weight. Let's work hard together. Right. If the more people we get, the less we can challenge or contribute.
Love it. Love that. Love that. I know we only have about 5 minutes left, and I want to make sure we get through the last two. But consideration. This is one that kind of I actually haven't heard in a list similar to this, like with human needs. But consideration. What would be some strategies there?
Well, think about that. About 66% of people leave your organization because they don't feel appreciated. Hmm. They don't feel regarded. They don't feel seen, heard, acknowledged for what they're doing. And so if you think about your shining stars, you don't pay enough attention to them. You don't show them consideration and regard. So consideration isn't just about money and incentives and that type of consideration. It's about really looking at them as a real person and saying, I value you here. Mm-hmm. And I'm considering you as we do things together. And so you need to pay attention to your shining stars in order to retain them. And you need to, I don't know if you've ever heard of the 5 love languages. There's a book that's a companion to it called The Languages of Appreciation at Work. Hmm. And if you know their language of appreciation, I can give you, high fives if you're physical touch appreciation. I can leave you words of affirmation if you'd like that. So people have different ways of being appreciated. You should know how each of your people or your team like to be appreciated. And that would probably be the shortest summary I can give you on that.
Oh, I absolutely love it. And the last one is confidence. And I really, I really like that confidence and contribute. All these are valuable, right? But those are the ones that really stand out for me. And I'm interested in the confidence in one, how we can make sure we're developing that with our teams.
Yeah. So lack of confidence, we get fear, apprehension, and doubt in our organizations. So we want confident organizations because 98% of people perform better when they're confident. Mm. And you figure when you performed at your best, you were confident at what you were doing, right? And so there are a lot of things we can do here. I think from the other six C's that start to build confidence, we want to get people to new capability. But my favorite one to share is that we must embrace failure. A lot of us gained confidence through experience and getting those new capabilities, and we weren't always great at it. We had mistakes. Successful people, it's that whole iceberg analogy. You'll see that in memes all the time. Here's the success, the tip of the iceberg, and here's everything it took to get there. And there was failure, mistakes, challenges, all of that. So too often as leaders and managers, we don't embrace failure. We try to cover it up, or we try to take care of people so they don't fail, meaning we do it for them. And so we have to allow within a risk tolerance, right? There's some areas where we it's high risk. We can't allow failure, but there's a lot of room for failure. You know, maybe that marketing piece isn't said exactly the way I would say it as your leader and manager, but you did your best at it. Now I can coach you through it. You get a new capability on it. It's your turn to send out the email or lead the team. Those are relatively low risk in the scale of risk, right? Mm-hmm. And that if you embrace failure in a way that you can say at the end of it, you can debrief it and you can say, what happened here in which we could either continuously improve or learn from, or I'm so glad you gave it a shot. Just saying that sometimes, man, I'm so glad you stepped up and did the presentation. Let's have a debrief on that to talk about how next time I can support you, or you can do it better, or we can talk about the points where I need to coach you and just learn from failure. I don't think we embrace failure enough at work. We try to cover it up or we try to fix it too fast. And there's so much learning to come from failure.
Absolutely love it. What a great list. And what tell everybody again, and we'll have in our show notes links so you can get access to the book. And the book can be found on Amazon, I'm guessing, and everywhere else. And give us the title of the book again so people can go out and find it and order it online.
Okay. The Human Team. So you created a team, but people showed up.
You created a team and people showed up. And so, the book rolls through all six of these, I'm guessing. And we're talking clarity, being connected, contributing, being challenged, consideration and appreciation, and the confidence that you have. I really, the best definition I've heard for confidence, and this is something I worked with people on this week and talked about, is, and I really liked it. And Joe, you and I may have talked about this in an episode that we recorded together, but it's holding to the promises that we set, that the promises we make to ourselves, and being confident, like the daily repetition of that. If I promise, like today, that I'm going to go run or I'm going to do this, and then if I can start stacking those things, like I'm really confident that I'm going to do this and I feel better about myself. I definitely feel more confident. Like I'm on a health challenge right now where I have to do certain things every single day, but I'm holding to that promise. I'm absolutely holding to that promise, and I'm getting repetition of that. And the failures I make, I'm correcting myself and making sure I get better. But because I'm holding to those promises, I'm really confident about what I'm doing right now. Right.
Yeah, and confidence is you can trust and count on what you're doing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Trust and count on what I'm doing. Right. And you do that by repetition, right? And of just knowing that you can knock it out. What Jeanette, what are the best ways that people can track you down? Is LinkedIn the best? Do you have other social media platforms that people can get your content and connect with you on?
LinkedIn's the best platform to find me on as far as conversation. And then you can go to my website to get coaching guides, assessment tools, all tied to these six C's. And it's business-alchemist.com/the human team.
Okay. And we'll make sure in our show notes that there's links to that. Really appreciate that hour. And I know we both have hard stops here at the end of the hour, but great setup, Joe. Great meet, man. I'm glad that you set this up.
Yeah, there's a lot of great content. We get to talk for two more hours easily on each one of these. So, and there's a lot more that she does that we didn't even get into. So we definitely appreciate your time today, Jeanette. It was awesome. Good stuff.
Absolutely. Thank you, Joe and George.
Yes, thank you very much. Everybody, have a great rest of the week. Again, this is Out from the Cube, but the idea of it, Joe and I were talking about this earlier today. Get out of your cubicle, right? You get out, be engaged, be vibrant, give energy to your teams. Get out of your cubicle. That's not our lives. And then we were also talking about getting out of your own cubicle in your head, right? Of that, I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not talented enough. I didn't go to the right school. I don't have the right resources. I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do that. Get out of that cubicle. We're all capable. We're all capable of more, better, you know, doing all this together. Find that group, that tribe that you belong to, and just get moving and start knocking things out. We're capable of greatness, everybody. So hopefully you will get out of your cube this week and go towards greatness. Everybody have a great rest of your week. Thank you.